This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Tomorrow, a Flex Friday broadcast at the American Heritage Museum. Monday is Veterans Day. Tomorrow is our third annual Lunch with a Hero, and we will be at the American Heritage Museum tomorrow morning, all morning long. I hope you will come with us. I got somebody DM me earlier and said they went and looked at the website, and the museum doesn't open till 10. They are opening for us. It is over 60,000 square feet of military artifacts and exhibits. I think you will love the place. I know you will love the opportunity to meet and shake the hand of the men and women who have served this country, who will be with us, including Joe Landry, who we met last year at Lunch with a Hero, and he just celebrated his 100th birthday, a member of the greatest generation. Joe will be with us. We'll have a birthday cake and cannot wait to see you. And breakfast free for the first 100 of you who are with us tomorrow as we get ready for Veterans Day weekend. But right now, Mike Milbury on a Bruins Thursday, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh by findmassmoney.gov, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow, and by Timeout Market. Timeout Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Good. I'm doing very well. It was an interesting week, and I think I've come to the conclusion that pantsuits don't win elections. First Hillary, and now Kamala, and pantsuits just don't go over well. And neither do the cool kids. Michelle Obama saying if black men don't vote for us, don't vote for Harris, they don't vote for us. And Oprah claiming this could be the last election. Uh-huh. Get back to your Hollywood mansions. Get away from me. I don't need to hear that stuff. And the other side, I mean, when Hulk Hogan comes and says that he's voting for Trump, is that really going to sway my opinion? The Hulk.
Not a big
please.
Hulk guy. No.
I'm a big Hulk guy, but I'm a big Hulk guy when he's in the ring. Not on the phone asking for my vote.
Well, listen, it seems like every week we talk to you and this Bruins team is struggling. They have been shut out in two of their last three losses. From your perspective, what is the issue with this team?
I'm not ready yet. Did you know that yesterday Elon Musk made $20 billion in the stock market?
Wow.
$20 billion.
That's a lot of money.
That's
it was
crazy.
The market was up 1,200 or 1,500 points that got closed, the Dow Jones anyway. And so,
maybe he can pay for a power play for the Bruins.
In one day, Elon got enough money to buy all four major teams in Boston. Not bad.
Anyway, they're clearly, you know, they beat a couple of also-ran teams. I mean, you're not going to get too excited about them beating the Kraken. And they go to Toronto where they usually have some pretty good luck, and it's just not clicking. I mean, they were even without Austin Matthews, their best player, and the Bruins just don't have it right. I mean, the power play has been stagnant all year, and who's on the power play? It's your best players, right? So you have to point the finger at the best players on the team underperforming. And the other side of the special teams equation is the penalty killing, which has usually been a real strong point for them. But Toronto had three power play goals, and they had seven or eight chances on the power play. Way too many undisciplined penalties by the Bruins yet again this week. And so they find themselves back into a funk. They just don't seem to be able to get out of it in any any particular segment of their game. It just keeps falling back into the abyss.
When it comes to coaching, is this looking to you like another situation where they are tuning their coach out, where he's not getting through to them?
Isn't it a little early for that? I mean, I don't like the fact that he's changed his approach now. He's being a little harder. He's been tougher. Maybe he didn't have to before. But, you know, when you get used to, and there's a lot of guys that have been around since he first got there, were used to a certain kind of coaching, and now he's trying to use instead of a soft hand, he's using the whip a bit more, and I don't know that they like it. But, listen, they deserve to be whipped a little bit the way they've played. I mean, this Zadorov, the steady stream to the penalty box after they give this guy a humongous contract. Come on, wake up, buddy. Wake up. The regular season's starting to fly by now. And, you know, the statistics are if you're not in it and by Thanksgiving, if you're not in the playoff spot, you're unlikely to be in it in April.
Mike, one of the things that we talk about with Gerard Mayo every Monday is penalties and how it's, you know, coaching has to be better or playing pre-snap. And I know it's different in hockey, but you just brought this up, and I want to ask you this because you've been there before. How much does like penalties fall on coaching in the NHL versus players in the NHL?
You know, ultimately, it's on the player. He's the one that's on the ice. The coach is not on the ice. The coach is going to advise. But eventually, when a guy continues to repeat a mistake, take a penalty, you know, whether it's a hooking call or a slashing call. I mean, the retaliation calls are the worst. Those are the ones that deserve immediate attention and reprimand, if not a seat on the bench. But the other reaching in, and there's a lot of that going on, a lot of hooking and holding because they don't get there fast enough and they don't anticipate enough, and that's probably on the players. And the problem here, I think, is, you know, there are a lot of players playing out of their position, and there are a lot of players on this team that probably don't deserve to be a regular in the lineup.
When it comes to players, did you like the decision to sit David Pastrnak in that third period, and how'd you feel about his reaction to it?
You play with fire when you go down the end of the bench and whack Marchand, or you play with fire when you bench Pastrnak. Listen, I'm tired of Pastrnak's giveaways. I mean, he's a giveaway machine. Like, come on, you've been in the league long enough now to know that when you get to the playoffs, you give the puck away, and you're in the offensive zone, and you're trying to make some miraculous play happen, try to pull a rabbit out of the hat, and it turns over and goes the other way. You're giving your team, you know, a death wish. I mean, there's got to be a time when he's got to learn that he's got to stop it. You give great players leeway to make dangerous plays because they sometimes complete them. But sometimes, and in certain situations, there's a time to put your creativity in your pocket and sacrifice it for the greater good of the team and protect the puck. That lesson needs to be learned by Pastrnak.
Mike, what's confusing to me is Montgomery, after Tuesday's loss, said the offensively they're starting to build. And I don't know how getting shut out over and over again, you can say that about this team. Am I missing something? I'm not the hockey guy, but to me, the offense seems to be lackluster.
It is. It's not great at all. There's no consistency to it, and there's been a steady shuffling of the line so that they don't get familiar with one another for the most part. It looks like he settled on Marchand and Lindholm and Pastrnak, at least for now, but I haven't seen any overwhelming forechecking presence from the Bruins at any point during the season, and I haven't seen that puck possession game. So they're struggling to find an identity, and I hate to say it already so early in, but I'm a little worried about the personnel choices that were made and whether they have the stuff to get out of this.
At this juncture, Mike, how do you view the Don Sweeney, Neely tenure in charge of this organization?
Well, it's a tough league to win in, Curtis. And they've been consistently at the top and competing. And we all know we want championships, but there are 32 teams out there. And, you know, the law of averages say you should win once every 32 years. I mean, that's not the reality because teams don't spend to the cap in some cases, and some teams will do it every year. But I think the Bruins have made an honest effort to be competitive and have been competitive every year. Would they have liked to win another championship or two? Would they take that seventh game back from St. Louis and mistakes that were made there? Well, it's tough to win it, but they have been competitive, and if you can live with that, you can certainly live with their performance. And I think most teams would be happy to have the kind of performance that these guys have put forth. But, you know, this version looks like it needs some repair.
If both are fired, let's just play this out. We don't know what's going to happen. But if Don Sweeney and Monty are both open for the rest of the NHL, who gets hired first for another team?
Well, I mean, I think Don Sweeney, you know, has earned his stripes as a general manager. I think he'll get hired quickly. And I think Montgomery, I mean, I think he's resurrected his career in a fairly significant way. But, you know, when you get fired, there's a sting to it, and there's a stink to it, and people get a little bit more cautious. But I'd say both of them would get hired right away. But I don't think it's the time for that right now. In either case, I think it deserves a little more time. But you focus on everything when you're struggling. But right now, I think the biggest concern is the players that they've assigned to this roster that don't have the depth. They don't have a second line right now. They don't even have a first line. They have a good second line, but not a top first line. And there's just not enough there for me to say, hey, they're really underachieving.
So if you were Don Sweeney, Jim Montgomery is coaching out his deal here. And you said a little while ago that if you're not a playoff team by Thanksgiving, then you're most likely not a playoff team. Would you be working on a new deal with him now?
Well, it's a little, given his regular season success and the fact that they lost to Florida, you know, the team that was obviously a champion or a runner-up 2 years ago, I mean, I would have thought maybe there would have been a discussion about a new contract, but I guess there's some cause for concern, or was, going into the final year of his contract. I can't, most coaches who've had success get the courtesy of an extension going into their last year, and you can't argue with his regular season success, but you would have to think that Don Sweeney has maybe some issues with what's happened in the postseason, or some other issues that has bothered him, because it's an odd situation for Montgomery to be entering this time in limbo. But at this point, I'm not. If I'm the general manager, I'm, given what I've seen on the ice, I'm not in a rush to re-up him.
Mike, you talked about the power play. Greg and I were at the game a couple weeks ago, and one thing that we kind of noticed with their power play, they struggled when it came to controlling and possessing the puck into the offensive zone. It was almost like a dump and chase. What do you think they should do differently, and how much, I guess, can you do differently in hockey as far as like different power play schemes or systems or things along those lines?
Well, the first thing that needs to be addressed is the entry into the offensive zone. You just mentioned it. There are a number of formations that you can establish, a number of options that should be on the table for the team, and that you should see them in practice almost every day, because it's so important. The power play is so important. So the first thing is get the puck with possession in the offensive zone. You've got one more guy than them, and you should never be outmanned around a loose puck in the offensive zone. You've got an extra guy, get him in there. And then there are schemes and plays that you can make off a power play, but most of the time the power play relies on skill, on puck movement and creativity. So it's not static. It's not, the guys at the point like McAvoy and Lindholm have to be laterally moving to change the angle of a guy trying to block your shot. The guys near the front of the net have to be in position to screen the goaltender, not just stand off to the side of the net and wave your stick at it in hopes of tipping it. You want to screen the goaltender, and if you can get a stick on and tip it, all the better. But the first things are first, and you got to get in his eyes. So there's a lot that's not going on for them. But usually when I mean, try to get to the things that you can control as a coach. And one of them is entry options. and then try to produce some common themes for the guys. Like, you know, I just mentioned lateral movement at the point, which causes everybody else to move. You know, if you get stagnant, you're in trouble. And McAvoy and Lindholm can do that, and they can do it more often, and they've got to shoot the puck more often. There's enough going on there to, you know, spend another hour on, but I'm just worried that, you know, their best players go on the power play, and they're underachieving right now. And the second unit is not, there's not enough firepower there for me to get too anxious about.
Well, the turnaround can begin this evening, and they can do it at the Garden. So, Mike Milbury, thank you, and we will talk to you again next week.
Now, was this depressing for everybody here today, or what?
I mean, the whole thing is kind of depressing.
It is. But you know what? It's a funny game, and maybe there's a spark there. Maybe a trade needs to take place and get everybody jazzed up, and we'll see what happens. But right now, there's the optimism is very cautious.
Yeah, I mean, I like your original suggestion, which apparently was Elon Musk is buying the Bruins from the Jacobs family. So I'm in on that.
Push over, Jim Montgomery. I'm interested in a slice of the pie. $20 billion.
As soon as Vice President Musk fixes everything wrong in Washington D.C., then he can buy the Bruins. All right, Mike Milbury, thank you.
Bye.
All right. Here is Courtney and what is trending right this moment.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by the 99. The Celtics fall to the Warriors at home 118-112, the final from the TD Garden. Jason Tatum led the way with 32 points, while Derek White had a good game with 26 points in the loss. The Bruins welcome the Flames to the TD Garden tonight. Puck drop is at 7. And Thursday Night Football, the Bengals are at the Ravens. Game time at 8:15. You can listen to that right here on EEI.
Have you built your parlay yet, Courtney?
I have not yet. Maybe you and I, after the show, can walk it through together.
How many legs in this baby are we guessing?
I like going for like a sixer.
All right. Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah. Get arachnid.
Yeah. Six, I think I feel comfortable with. One.
I told you to jump
arachnid.
On.
Arachnid.
Don't arachnids have six legs?
I don't know.
I think you are correct about that. But then what is the eight-legged spider?
An octopus.
Well, no, the spider. Because you're going to. Isn't an arachnid.
Well, a spider is an arachnid, isn't
right.
it?
Right. But I think, can a spider not have more than six legs? I don't know.
Because scorpions, I think, are technically arachnids, and they have six legs.
I see.
So what makes spiders have... Well, I Googled this. Do spiders have eight legs or six? The answer, according to Marine Biology something. So what made spiders settle for eight legs? I think the best answer and simplest one is that spiders have eight legs because their parents did. So eight legs, not six.
Okay. The more you know.
Interesting.
All right. I told you to jump on that FanDuel first 3 minute score. It's a good one, man.
Yeah, I'm on one app. I don't think I need to add other apps.
And then another one says arachnids have four pairs of legs. So that's four times two. Do
eight.
The math.
There you go.
Eight.
All right. Cozy up to irresistible new fall flavors at the 99 restaurant, like the freshly baked homestyle chicken pot pie packed with chicken and topped with a buttery flaky crust, or the creamy short rib mac and cheese. You gotta love the nines. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
I would love for a stenographer to just note the non-sports debates we have on a given show. Just bizarre ways in which we devolve into nonsense. 64 degrees, partly cloudy. By the way, Courtney, great job on the trendings today. 4 for 4.
Thank you so much.
Afternoon high of 67.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
That is Joe Mazzulla after a loss last night and during the break, a 781 texter on the Subaru of New England text line suggesting that we have been downplaying the importance all morning long of a Celtics loss last night. Maybe excusing it away with the absence of Jaylen Brown or Kristaps Porzingis. They go on and on and on here, but a less talented basketball team came into your arena and beat you is essentially a summation of what that texture is.
Maybe Wiggy's guy should, change things up a little bit earlier and they wouldn't have scored 14 points or whatever it was in the second quarter.
You mean the greatest coach in the NBA?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you need your others to play well.
I mean, Jason Tatum shot 50% from the field.
That's why I said,
why isn't he shooting more?
That's your others. Your others didn't play well.
White played fine.
No, but other
Derek White played great.
But I don't think
maybe Jaylen Brown was the MVP rightfully.
That long three that he had at the end of that game, the fourth quarter was he played great.
Right, but Derek White's not an other. I'm talking about like you needed P. Pritch.
Well, you put it all on Peyton Pritchard.
No, but
you've done it all.
He's been one of your best offensive six-man players. We were literally just talking, and he struggled. He had a game where he was, he shot, 3-for-11 from three-point land. He had a game where his field goal percentage was 5 of 16 or something like that.
It doesn't sound like you're describing the MVP of the NBA.
No, who's the MVP of the NBA got you over 30. Got you.
Right. The others for all MVPs of my lifetime have never been the story when the team's MVP fails.
Well, yeah,
it's always about the best player, especially in basketball.
He did not fail. He had over a 30 burger.
But if I'm the coach, the guy's hot. Feed him the ball more. Why is he sitting out for 4 minutes?
And he carried your team, got you in a position where you were only, at one point in time, you were up in the game, late in the game.
No, I mean, listen, coming back, being down, they were down 10 at half because they got the buzzer beater at halftime, Golden State. And then you had the 41-point third quarter.
Right.
And you're back in that game.
Right.
But I think Shime's argument is that's a game last night that you need your coach. There are not a lot of them in the NBA, but that's one where you need your coach to give you that something that helps you win that basketball game.
And your team MVP, we always talk about him. We don't want him taking stupid, dumb shots when he's double-teamed, and he created a lot of opportunity to get guys good open looks.
He only had 2 assists last night.
No, but a lot of them were the hockey assists, too, where you get doubled and then
the hockey assists.
Yeah, well, you run a double at him. What do you want, him hawking up shots?
Don't give actual stats.
I mean, the guy shot 50% from the field.
Yes.
Yes, I want him to shoot more. If I'm the head coach, I'm designing plays and scenarios where Jason Tatum gets open more, and he didn't do that.
Shime, Tatum shot a bunch. The reason why they lost this game is simple. When they were down by 4
late, he shot
late,
a bunch. Derek White shot like 6 more threes than he did.
When he shot 10 three-pointers.
Shot 16 and Peyton Pritchard shot 11.
He was 5 of 10 from three-point land. He was 50%.
I know, and he should have been shooting more.
No, the problem was when they were close at the end, they gave up way too many offensive rebounds, which then led to second-chance points by Golden State.
But you understand what Shime's saying.
Shime's saying feed Tatum more
because he was on point last night.
They
should be taking more shots. He should be taking more threes because they're falling.
But listen, they were feeding him. When they're running doubles at your best player, you don't want your best player taking stupid shots.
Then as the coach, you need to design ways to get him open.
No, you don't bench him.
But he did.
No, he gave him his normal rest that he gives him in the fourth quarter.
But when he's hot, to put him on the bench for 4 minutes is such a dumb call.
But
in
if
my
you
opinion.
Watch the game, they were running doubles and they were trying to work pick and rolls with Jason Tatum. But they were still, and even Steve Kerr, you could see them. As soon as Tatum got the ball, he's yelling at the players, go get him.
Yeah, but then he should have been. So what Mazzulla should have been doing is having him work more off the ball.
What should have been happening is the guys that when Tatum was then getting the ball to, they got to make those shots.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're 7-2, so they were bound to lose a game or two this season.
Right.
I guess the argument is from the texter that they want an overreaction when it comes to this team losing a game like
I'm not going to do it.
Like they lost last
Shine's an overreaction. Like, Tatum wasn't your issue.
I never said he was. I'm saying he was so good they should have been giving him the ball more. Tatum's absolutely not the issue.
He had the ball more, but he's not going to take dumb shots. The issue was...
I'm not telling him to take dumb shots.
Listen, the issue was the fact that your others that you needed that generally play well for you had a bad night.
I think the issue could also be that you really miss Jaylen Brown.
Oh, of course you do.
Jaylen Brown is not available.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know that. You know if you don't have this...
But Curtis brought it up this morning... From a, if you want to call it the alpha perspective or whatever.
I ain't got nothing to do with it, man. We passed the alpha perspective. That's just a low-hanging, stupid conversation argument to have.
It's really hurtful.
Oh, no, it is, though.
I don't think Curtis is stupid.
What's,
I try and respect
you. No, no, if Jaylen Brown's on the court, he's your second best player, so you're a much better basketball team.
Greg, if we're going to be honest about the whole thing, Wiggy was disrespectful of Jaylen Brown at the start of the season, saying Mazzulla was more important to the team than Jaylen Brown. Last night, I just would present for the evidence of the jury, I dispute Wiggy's premise highly.
Yeah.
That is all.
But I think
you are literally on drugs if you think the team would be in a better place without Jaylen Brown.
I didn't say they'd be in a better place. You said if I had to choose between the two.
So wouldn't you want to be in a better place if you're choosing? What do you mean?
No. You said because we were having the...
Right. If you had to choose between the two, which one puts you in a better place?
No. I said I would probably go with Mazzulla because...
You didn't say probably. You were all in
on
Mazzulla.
I said I would go with Mazzulla because you could get another guy.
Right,
but he might not be as talented as Jaylen Brown.
We don't think that's the correct answer. Right.
And I said, but that's fine. But my opinion is you could get another guy and Mazzulla could get the best out of that.
508 texter says you are making excuses and the Golden State Warriors are continuing to rent space in the Celtics' heads.
I'm not making excuses. You lost the game where you had an opportunity to win that game, but... You lost it because of your poor defensive rebound late in the game. You lost it because early in the game, you weren't able to hit shots. Your best player was cold early. He turned it on. Your sixth man that you expect to have good games night in and night out, your secondary scorer, he had a bad night. That's why you lost the game. And the others on the other team, Gary Payton Jr., Buddy Hill, those guys turn.
So let me ask a question. When it comes to Olympic playing time, do you think that Steve Kerr left here feeling like he made a mistake or that his decision was justified?
No, I think Steve Kerr thought his decision was justified as soon as he made that decision for the whole Olympics.
Do you think the performance of Jason Tatum and the Celtics last night backed that up for him?
No, because Jason Tatum's performance alone would have been like, why wouldn't you play a guy like that who shoots 50% from three-point land, who goes out and scores 30 and shoots 50% from the field? Why wouldn't you be playing him in the Olympics? That just don't make sense.
This is Mike from Brockton. Hello, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
What's up?
I don't know who said that. I don't know. Maybe I misheard it, but they said Jason Tatum was the problem last night. Last year.
Nobody said that.
What was his? Okay. I just wanted to make sure I heard it. I didn't hear that. Couple things. Last year, what was his biggest criticism last year?
He couldn't.
What was the biggest criticism?
And like he didn't have the killer mentality? Didn't finish or something?
Or when the lights were too bright, he would kinda screw up.
That was the bottom of it. The main thing was he takes dumb shots and he takes too many shots, ill-advised shots. Now, when he's starting to try to play, when he's getting others involved, well, you should have shot the ball. Some of that, last night, I put a lot out on Mazzulla. One of the big things that really bothered me last night was the last four or five possessions of that game, the last 3 to 4 minutes of that game. They scored, but they couldn't get stops. Why? Because Quaita was on the floor. They kept attacking him in pick and roll. If you got Steph, Steph did the same thing to him in the championship year that they won. Steph did the same thing on Al Horford. They searched out Al Horford in pick and roll. Al Horford kept getting switched on him, and that's dead island. Either he's gonna shoot it, or he's gonna beat you off the dribble, get in the lane, kick the ball out to an open scorer, or finish. He did that to Quaita the last 3 to 4 possessions of that game,
and I'm screaming. You're saying what? That's Mazzulla.
Mazzulla. That was Mazzulla last night at the end of that game.
Yeah, I would agree with Mike on that one. Yeah. I would agree with him because there was a ton of pick and rolls.
Jordan Walsh.
There was a ton of pick and rolls where Quaid did have, was playing Steph Curry, and Steph Curry was just cooking them. But I guess it's like, all right, if you take Quaid out, then you lose some of that size when it comes to rebounds and then blocking shots. Then who becomes the guy that can maybe defend? Oh, here's what I would have did. I would have ran the double at Steph and took the ball out of his hands and made other guys beat me. Well, kind of like they did what they were taking.
But if your best player, your superstar, has his first points of the fourth quarter with 3 minutes left, that's either on him or it's on Joe Mazzulla when it comes to playing time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and
but that's, I think it was on him because he was missing shots. It was like missing shots. So it's not like you're not taking shots, you're just missing shots.
And his explanation is that he never embraced the whole revenge thing, and he doesn't want to, you know, he never bought into that, and that's not who he is, and so he's...
Well, yeah, he said that, but see, that's the problem. People want Tatum to be something he ain't. They want him to have this,
I think some fans wanted him to embrace last night as an opportunity to go out there and show up Steve Kerr. Absolutely.
They want him to be louder. They want him to be this.
No, Wiggy, this is the move in the goalpost.
If they win this game, it's not a move in the goalpost.
It is.
If they win this game, don't people then go, great by Tatum to show up Steve Kerr?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I don't think my issue, Wiggy, with the back and forth on this is that you have been very vocal. That Jason Tatum is the MVP of the NBA and he is disrespected.
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Yep.
So when the others aren't performing, what needs to happen to win a game? If you're the MVP of the NBA.
You got to try to carry your team the best
and
way
so
you can.
It's not saying that he sucks or that he's not good. It's just that if you think you're the MVP of the NBA, then you should be able, in the fourth quarter, against a team like the Warriors, take the game over as other MVPs do
in
other
seasons. But the problem is, when you look at, if you're going to go down that road, every team on MVPs, they have help from their others, even when the game, because guess what? When you're that good, at the end of games, they're going to take the ball out of your hands. And that's what Golden State did last night. I'll give Steve Kerr credit for that. He said, Jason Tatum ain't beating us. He gets the ball, we're running two guys at him.
But didn't you just say, though, that if you were Joe Mazzulla, you would have taken the ball out of Steph Curry's hands?
Yeah.
So you're saying Joe Mazzulla didn't do his job last
night? Yes, I said at the end of the game he didn't.
Well, and, Wiggy, you said that when Jalen's in there, he gets double-teamed anyway. So what's the difference?
He does get double-teamed.
You just said
and then Jalen makes shots.
Okay.
So what are you two missing that I ain't saying that I haven't been saying?
Because I originally came at you that Joe Mazzulla was not good in last night's game, and you kept defending him, and now all of a sudden you're saying he wasn't good.
No, I defended him. And I said, at the end of the game, I agree he made the mistakes.
Greg, my question for you, simply.
Yes.
That's when you know you want an argument, Courtney. Because when you...
I'm just so befuddled I can't respond.
When you say
You're just jumping over the fence, left and right. Pick a side.
No, I've been on the same side since the beginning of the show.
Wiggy, if he's the one making mistakes, then it's Joe Mazzulla's
fault. He made mistakes at the end of the game.
Yes, and that was my whole point, and did was defend him for 10 minutes.
No, your whole point was that Mazzulla was making mistakes all game long.
So you don't think Kerr out-coached Mazzulla last
He out-coached him
night.
In the last...
Mazzulla only made bad mistakes.
Then we can all agree on that.
Yes. But I agree with that. I said in the last 5 minutes of the game, the caller said, he did out-coach him because Steve Kerr said, we're running a double, where Mazzulla was like, we're not going to do that. We're going to switch the pick and roll, which left...
That game ended. Steve Kerr was out of timeouts. Joe Mazzulla had plenty left.
Joe Mazzulla had they had one timeout. Because Steve Kerr used his final timeout on the out-of-bounds play at the end of the game where Draymond Green couldn't get the ball.
Hey, can I call a quick 20-second timeout?
Yes.
All right. No TV timeout here. Just a quick one. Wiggy. So you said Jason Tatum gets double-teamed.
Yes.
And then he throws the ball to Jaylen Brown.
Other players.
Okay. To Jaylen Brown, the second best player on the team.
Or the other players, I said. Go ahead.
No, you didn't. You just said Jaylen Brown, but that's okay.
No. If you listen, Curtis, I know what you're trying to do.
Well, but you're so wrong on this.
I'm not wrong.
So you'd rather Joe Mazzulla than the guy that hits the open shot.
Are we going back down to Joe Mazzulla?
It makes no sense to me. I'm not sighing, and I love you. You look very nice in that shirt.
No, but you're going back. This is like you're morphing into the Joe Mazzulla, Jaylen Brown thing like you morph into – blame it on Belichick.
Oh, God, I'm good at politics.
I had said, yes, that's my opinion.
Okay, let's go around the room. Greg, what do you think? Mazzulla or Jaylen Brown, more important?
Jaylen Brown is more important.
Courtney Cox Dettore.
Jaylen Brown.
Chris Shimaracnid.
That would be Jaylen Brown.
Okay.
So how is that making your point?
It's not. It's just fun.
No. But if you're going to have a conversation, then at least say, when I said they ran a double at him, he gets the ball out of his hands, whether it's Jaylen Brown or other players. Okay. Then you go right back to going, we could have a conversation 7 months down the road.
Yeah.
And you'll go,
listen, back to the original question. 9 games in.
Right.
They've lost 2-1 at home.
Yes.
Are you at all, any tiny bit of concern?
No.
There?
No.
Okay,
no, but
because of injuries.
But the argument is like, if we're arguing in the moment about certain things.
Joe Mazzulla, hot seat?
No. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. The problem is Curtis, he'll go back 9 months and say, well, so you still take Jaylen Brown or Joe Mazzulla? Yeah. We're talking about in the moment.
Okay.
In the moment.
Right. Well,
you got to expand. You know, you got to expand your
horizon.
You got to expand your argument.
Knowledge
or guns. You got to have more than just one gun with the same bullet.
Curtis is big on leading questions.
We had this argument briefly at the start of the show. We had it again a little bit during Leeds. And if you missed either of those, a reminder that you can always go back and listen to anything that you may have missed on this show on the Odyssey app. So you can rewind. You can even rewind and relive it again.
Well, that's what Curtis does every argument. It was Brady. It was Bill's fault. So you want Brown over, you want Mazzulla over Brown.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, we literally could be talking about Kristaps Porzingis.
Curtis is living in a rewind.
He is a one-bullet assassin.
That means I got a great shot.
No, it means that's the only shot.
Is he a one-trick pony?
That is it.
He is.
That is it. Yeah. And we know the pony does.
All right. Download the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Then you can listen to us from wherever you want at any time. Tomorrow morning, a Flex Friday broadcast to celebrate those who have served this country. We will be at the American Heritage Museum, which is half in Hudson and half in my hometown, longtime hometown of Stowe, Massachusetts, from 6 to 10 tomorrow. Please come out. Breakfast from the All Town for the first 100 of you who are there. And, you know, one of my life adages is that any day in which you are able to somehow obtain a free meal is a good day. And I know you agree. Speaking of that,
mm-hmm.
I got to tell you something. D'Angelo's is moving right up to the top of we had a discussion the other day about best submarine sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
D'Angelo's sent some food over this morning.
Very good.
Mm. Right up to the top of my list.
Very good.
I don't know what you tried, but
chicken Vermonter. Yeah. I don't know what the sauce was on it. It was so good. There was
like
some
honey
bacon.
Mustard or something.
Yeah, there was some bacon on it, though. Some cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, it was really, really good.
I went Thanksgiving in lieu of the forthcoming holiday, and the stuffing mix was perfect. Not too much.
Cranberry.
Just enough in the cranberry.
I went steak bomb.
Yeah.
I think you mean in honor. If it was in lieu, you wouldn't be eating that on Thanksgiving.
Maybe in honor. Did I say in lieu?
It's okay. I want to go to the lieu.
Yes, in lieu.
Mark Wahlberg's restaurant just blew up in Las Vegas. Erupted in flames.
What?
Yeah, La Fecha.
Anyway, geez, really?
just popped across my screen. But D'Angelo's is awesome. Whenever you see them, they're not as all over the place as they used to be, but they are a great, great spot.
Yeah, they really, really are fantastic. And the bread is
perfectly toasted.
Fresh. Oh, yeah. The chicken one was toasted?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Very,
it was
very
a little
fresh.
Toasted.
The chicken one?
Yeah, you got to look on the inside.
You sure?
The argument.
You've got to look on the inside of the bread.
That was toasted, I guess.
All right.
I didn't know that.
All right. Yeah, so please come out tomorrow morning. Yes. Can't wait to see ya.
Right.
You'll be blown away by this place.
You know, I learned something new.
Oh, you did?
Every day.
Yes. On this show or
on this show in general, whether it's dealing with everybody on here, and you start to learn. And I just learned this, and I wrote notes down because I wanted to make sure I got to this.
Okay.
I learned this about Curtis today. And I've been working on it for a long time. No, it has nothing to do with sensitivity. It's just something I've learned over the years. Over the years of many things. It's like you get things together.
Right.
I've learned when he's losing an argument or he can't make his point, he ultimately goes to flip the switch, nuclear bomb mood. And that is, when it's football, it's blame Bill, or it was all because of Brady.
Okay. All right.
Basketball, Missoula sucks. Baseball, John Henry is too busy doing other stuff. Okay. We could literally be talking about a onside kick that Mayo elects to go for in a game. And when he's losing the argument or can't make his point, he'll instantly go, Bill sucks.
I think we should move on from this.
Yeah. Thank you, drunk me.
That's Curtis, what I've learned today.
Curtis, you now are on the clock. You have a moment to respond.
Here it goes.
That would have been much quicker if he just said, this is what I learned, instead of doing the whole thing about writing
it down.
Pick.
I like to
but
write things
it's
down.
It's okay. Far be it for me to critique.
Here goes the nuclear switch.
No, I would just, the point of Jalen versus Missoula was just laughably insane.
No,
so I bring it up when we're talking about a Tatum. So if you're, I think, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
If we're talking about a night where it was all about Tatum, right? It was about his revenge against Kerr. Yeah. Jalen Brown's out. Big game at the Garden. Wiggy's got front row seats.
Mm-hmm.
After the game that they end up losing because the others weren't performing, wouldn't it stand to reason you revisit a take that said the coach was more important than the number two player on the roster?
No,
is that not logical?
No, because it's not the take wasn't about Tatum not performing or Missoula making some last minute mistakes. It wasn't about Jalen Brown. The conversation is, we know Jalen Brown's a great player. And the conversation that we had about that was a while ago on, like, maybe like a week and a half ago on, like, who would we rather type deal, right? I don't know why we got into it, but it was just we got into it. So last night we're just talking about where did the Celtics go wrong. And then it was like, we're literally going 70 down the highway. And then it's like, cross the median, go to the other side. Greg.
Yes. Yeah. What? Yes.
So, who would you choose?
What do you mean?
That's what Curtis did. Oh. Like, we're literally having a conversation, and it's like, wait a second. Okay. Who would you choose?
Well,
that's the nuclear switch.
I feel like to keep things fair, when it comes to arguments, you can never lose one.
No, I argue in the moment. I lost the Cam Newton one.
Oh, that was the last one. That was
no,
five.
No. I agree.
That was 5 years ago.
No, I agree. And
that's
I lost the
pretty good run.
I know. I lost the Jalen Brown one. I lost the Joe Mazzulla one because I got on the Joe Mazzulla train.
Yep.
I was like, I don't think he's the reason why. So well, I can admit it.
A lot of fun today, everybody.
Always fun.
We will be back tomorrow morning from the American Heritage Museum. And you will get the opportunity, if you listen tomorrow, whether you listen on any of the radio stations we have for you all over New England or on the Odyssey app or you stream the show or you watch the show on YouTube or on Twitch, you will have the opportunity to meet Joe Landry, who is an incredible guy that we got to meet a year ago at our Lunch with a Hero event. And I cannot wait for tomorrow morning and your chance to meet and hear from Joe Landry, World War II veteran who just turned 100 years old. So I think we'll do Ask a Greatest Generation person with Joe tomorrow morning on the show. All right?
That would be funny.
We'll absolutely do that.
Like, when we were doing it with you, like, what did you have to do if you got stuck somewhere, find a payphone? Like,
well, he drove trucks in World War II.
Right.
You can ask him how he found his way around Europe without GPS.
Yeah, those maps must have been.
Probably a map that was, you know, carved out of stone or something.
You had to figure out how to drive on the opposite side of the road and use a map.
People don't have maps everywhere, such as.
All right, Jones and Kiefer next. Thank you for your patronage.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Relava?
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.